1. A telltale flashes on the alert board, bright red against the dim light of the room. I toss the last of my salami and cheese wrap in the trash and shove a station boot against the desk drawer, scooting my chair across the room. Arriving at the console, I wipe my fingers on my gray station coverall and tap out a command. Bot 43H, again, I mutter. That bot has been a pinhole in my air supply for the last week. It keeps hanging up on level 72. Diagnostics show nothing every time, which means I'm going to have to climb into the access and see what's going on. Probably gum. Those idiot upper-level women insist on spitting the stuff on the deck. Don't they know it makes them look like dirt-side trash? And it's impossible for the bots to handle. You'd think after hundreds of years, someone would figure out how to clean up gum, but it still takes a human with a scraper to get the mess off the deck. This time, the bot is on level 67, but it still could be gum. Diagnostics show nothing, again, so I fire up the on-bot cam. A fuzzy lump appears on the screen. The fuzziness is due to the crap resolution, standard maintenance bot equipment. I stare at the screen and try to sharpen the image. The good news? It's way too big to be gum. My stomach cramps suddenly as the salami and cheese launches an attack on the tasty bun I ate for breakfast. I take a deep breath through my nose and force the nausea down. I knew that wrap looked a little dodgy, but it was only 2 days past its freshness date. Note to self, no more Vendo food. I pan the camera to the right and barely make it to the trash can before the tasty bun surges back out the way it went in, pushing everything else I've eaten today ahead of it. After a few minutes of heaving, my stomach settles down to an uncomfortable rumble. I wipe my face on my sleeve, rinse my mouth with a swig from my water bottle, spit it in the trash, and do some deep breathing. Another drink and some more breathing. Then I slowly turn back to the screen where my mind finally comprehends what my stomach instinctively knew. That lump is a very dead body. After another trip to the trash can, I stumble into the bathroom. Running cold water over my wrists and splashing more on my face seems to help, so I do that for a while. The body isn't going anywhere, so there's no rush, right? By the time my hands are numb, I'm ready to make the report. Back in the maintenance control center, I bring up the in-station comm and tag the ops supervisor.
Ops, Al-Rashid Thompson,
says a familiar voice as my boss, known among the maintenance group as Rash, although we'd never say that to his face, appears on the screen. Maintenance, more, I respond. The required self-identification always seems silly to me. Our names are pasted right up there on the screen under the vid. But today the rote exchange is comforting. Request confidential, I add. Surprise crosses Rash's face, but he leans a little closer to the camera as he taps in the secure call sequence.
Confidential protocol established, he says
as the purple telltale begins flashing on my screen.
What the hell's up, Triana?
I found something. I swallow hard, and then launch into the whole story. I'd swear I can hear heads swivel toward him when he hollers, Zark! But with the confidential protocol turned on, I know it's just my imagination.
Okay, you sit tight, he says in a low voice.
The rest of the op center can't hear me, but they can hear him. No one's invented a cone of silence. Yet.
I'll notify security, and I'm sure they'll contact you soon. Did you record the vid you got from the bot?
Of course, I snap. It automatically records, and we're not allowed to turn it off. Rash smiles tightly.
I know the rules, he says, but I also know you. Make sure you've got the vid.
2. The door chimes. I check the readout. Security. That was fast. Way faster than I expected. I look down at my chest to make sure there's no stray vomit or spit splatters and hit the unlock button. The door whooshes open, and 4 rigid, black-clad, mirror-helmeted agents stride into the room, executing precise turns and taking up obviously pre-assigned positions at parade rest. The maintenance control center is not very big, so having 4 military types stomping around in here is a little claustrophobic. I jump as one bumps my chair with his burly elbow.
Triana Moore, barks the one by the door.
He has the most stripes, so I guess he's the leader. That's me, I reply.
I'm Agent Baker, he says. Secure the room!
For a few seconds, no one moves. Then I realize he's telling me to lock the door. I smack the screen, miss the button, and try again. The door whooshes, and the light over it flashes to red. Agent Baker pulls off his helmet and reveals a mass of tightly curled purple hair, a nose stud, and long, dark eyelashes.
Oops. Baker's a woman. She must have the galaxy's strongest compression bra. There is no hint of a curve under the tight-fitting black material. Distracted, I glance at the other three, wondering what they've got hidden under all that leather clothing.
We got a report of a dead body, Baker states,
her eyes never leaving my face. Again, there's an awkward silence as I try to figure out if she's asking me a question or giving me a report. I've found it's best to talk as little as possible when dealing with security, so I wait.
Where is it? She finally demands.
Level 67, D-ring. Slice 7. I give her the location in standard station reference. Not sure security agents would know where maintenance grid 67-243.8 is. Most people don't. Her jaw tightens, and she jerks a hand toward the big screen.
Show me.
I call up the 3D station schematic. Station Kelly Kornenko, or SK2-142 as we're formally known, is built on the standard cylindrical template. We have 83 decks, each laid out in concentric rings. The center of each deck is named the concourse. It's where float tubes and public areas are found. Offices and workspaces fill the middle rings, with the wealthier and more powerful occupying the outermost ring A. There are 10 radial corridors which run from the concourse out to A, and each radial bisects a slice, bearing the same number. Yeah, slice. Like a slice of an 83-layer cake. I zoom in to level 67 and rotate it to slice 7. Swiping it bigger, I insert a little green arrow on grid 243.8. It's a bot duct, not accessible to most station residents, I say.
Do you have a visual? How do you know it was a body? Have you touched it?
The questions quickfire out of her mouth. I stare at Baker. Have I touched it? My voice jumps an octave. Who in their right mind would touch a dead body? My stomach lurches, but I grip my teeth and breathe in hard through my nose. No way I'm going to Ralph in front of the Iron Maiden. Besides, it's on level 67 and we're on 2. I stab a finger at the schematic floating on the screen.
Give me a copy of that schematic, she says, then show me the vid.
When I tap the copy button, she holds out her left hand. The fabric of her glove glows a little near the base of her middle finger as her hollow ring wakes. Do you want the full 3D? I ask. It's a pretty big file. Baker doesn't answer. She just gives me the stink eye and makes a give-it-to-me gesture with her fingers. I touch the screen and flick toward her hand, where the rotating green loading icon fades in over her palm. Turning back to the screen, I pull up the recording of my discovery and a current view from the bot cam. Then I tell the whole story one more time. Baker asks a few questions, while the other agents apparently turn to stone around the room. When I'm finished, the loading icon is still flashing in Baker's palm, although it's cycled to blue, indigo, violet, and on through the whole rainbow at least twice by now. I smirk a little, but bite back my, I told you so. Even I'm not dumb enough to piss off sec agents. Much. Anymore. A tiny copy of the schematic pops up over her hand, and Baker zooms into the green arrow. She rotates the view a couple times, zooming in and out. And suddenly I realize she has no idea how to find this location. Don't SEC agents have to pass some kind of station orienteering course? After a few more minutes, she grinds her teeth. Really, I could hear it.
You will take me here, she commands. Now, Lutovsky, Smith, you'll run the lockdown here. Chen, with me!
The statues snap to attention, and one of them marches to the door. I scoot back in my chair. I can't take you, I say.
Don't want to, I mean.
I can't leave the MCC unattended.
Lutovsky and Smith will be here, Baker grinds out.
Clearly, she is getting tired of me. Well, the feeling is mutual. Regulation 4930.35 states a maintenance technician must be on duty in the MCC at all times, I recite. I have no idea what reg says that, but I'm pretty sure one of them does. Baker grinds her teeth, again, and jams a finger at the comm board.
Get the ops soup on the line. I'm sure he'll authorize an exception.
She's right. Rash falls all over himself, yes ma'aming Agent Baker. 3 minutes later, we're on our way out of the MCC and heading toward the float tubes. I don't like the upper levels. Everything above 40 is full of ultra-wealthy visitors and even richer residents. They all wear trendy clothes, no one seems to have an actual job, and it all smells like passion fruit air freshener instead of the slightly metallic sweat sock aroma of the lower levels. Dampers mute the conversational noise to a dull hum,
and noise machine tracks tinkle in the background. Constantly. The shops and restaurants are priced for people with more money than brains. And if you're wearing a station coverall, you're invisible. I mean, really. I've been walked into, shoved out of the way, and even mowed down by an old geezer in a float chair. It's different this time. The upper levs may ignore station crew, but the black security uniforms get their attention right quick. People loitering in the corridors all find something urgent to do somewhere else as soon as we step out of the float tube. I swallow a laugh as a sharply dressed guy stares at his hollow-free palm, gives himself a dramatic head slap, and darts into a nearby store. Agent Baker isn't as reserved. Her snort of laughter rings through the now-deserted hallway. With her helmet on, even her laugh sounds androgynous and strangely robotic. The helmets must have some kind of voice changer in them, because Chen sounds identical when he speaks. The fleeing guy looks back over his shoulder and promptly crashes into a whole rack of lingerie. I love coming up here. They run like rats from a guest compartment. Baker laughs again, punching the other agent in the arm. Chen staggers a bit, but quickly catches his balance. I give Chen another look. I had assumed male, but maybe Chen is a woman? Baker snorts one more time, then pops the station schematic up in her palm. Lead the way, Mo. Without bothering to look at her hollow, I turn right. 100 meters down the hallway, I turn left at the corridor leading to the outer rings of the station, and right again at D-ring. A few 100 meters down, I wave my hollow ring at a door marked Authorized Personnel Only, which whooshes open. This is grid 243, I call out over my shoulder as I trot through the narrow space. I don't know if they can hear me over the clanging of their boots on the metal floor. Their boots were designed for the carpeted areas, I guess. Or for audio intimidation. Subgrid 8 is this way. As we approach 8, a putrid smell fills the corridor. I try to pull the collar of my uniform up over my nose. But 43H is right where I expected, diligently advancing and retreating as it tries to find a way around the, obstruction. I press my back against the wall so Baker and Chen can get by, carefully keeping my eyes away from that still lump blocking the corridor. The duct is narrow. Chen lurches against me as he pushes past. Definitely a guy. He's wearing so much body spray I can smell it through his supposedly impermeable uniform when he's this close. I guess a thick cloud of black hole for men is better than parfum du death. Get this butt out of here, Baker growls. I'll tape off the area, says Chen. I flick a few commands on my hollow ring and hit the send icon. The bot trundles past me back toward the garage. There's no need for tape, I say. Only the bots come out here, and they'll roll right through the tape. I can block this section for as long as you need. Baker's head turns toward me. I hate that I can't see her face behind the mirrored visor. I start to sweat as she stares, and realize I've broken my own rule. Say as little as possible to security. The tape is to keep nosy maintenance workers out, not bots, she finally says. Lutovsky and Smith will block the bots. I open my mouth and close it again without saying anything. When did SEC agents learn to program maintenance bots? Usually that kind of work is beneath them. And who knows what they'll muck up in the process. Maybe I should go back and help them, I say, trying to breathe through my mouth. The smell is bad enough, but thinking about its cause makes my stomach heave again. I inch back down the hall, my back still pressed against the wall. Baker's helmet turns toward me again. I freeze, my eyes impossibly huge in that mirrored surface. After another long moment, she nods. Chen will escort you back. I finally blink as she turns away. I know how to get back, I mutter. Chen will escort you back, she repeats. Even through the voice changer, I can tell it's a command. I shrug and turn away. Chen can escort me if he can keep up. Just before we reach the door, Chen grabs my arm. A wave of dizziness washes over me and I stagger against him. He holds me upright and leans in. His visor clears, and concerned gray eyes peer down at me. Are you okay? The voice still sounds robotic, but it's comforting to see his face instead of my own warped reflection. I guess. My own voice is faint and quavery. Maybe I'm just in shock or something. He nods.
Let's get you back to your office so you can sit down.
By the time we get back down to level 2, I'm feeling better. The other two agents let us in and I sink down into my chair.
The screens look normal, and the bots are performing fine. I gulp down half a bottle of water and lean back in my chair. The agents stand immobile again, but Chen's faceplate is still transparent, so I can see his lips moving. That's why they spend so much time as statues. They're talking to each other on a private circuit. Thinking back, Baker's silences seem much less threatening now that I know she was talking to Chen. I wonder what she was saying. I wave my hands in front of Chen's helmet. Hello? I can see you. What are you talking about? Can I get back to work? Chen starts, eyeing me. He says something else I can't hear, then smiles. A professional-looking smile. Probably learned it in agent school. How to disarm anxious citizens. I shake my head and try to focus on Chen's voice.
We're done here.
He's staring at me, like a doctor presented with a mysterious illness.
Are you feeling okay? You still look a little pale. I can take you up to the clinic if you want.
The words are kind, but I get the impression he's anxious to get away. Who wants to babysit a nauseated witness when there's crime fighting to be done? I pull myself out of a strange vision of SEC agents wearing tights and capes, and nod at Chen. I'm fine. Or I will be as soon as I get back to work. I flex my fingers and roll up to the console. Chen blanks his helmet visor. Even though I know what he looks like, he's so creepy with the shiny mirrored face. The other two pick up their bags, toss a couple wrappers in the trash, and push in their chairs like good little children. I still can't tell who is who, but I really don't care. I just want them to leave so I can take a nap.
We'll contact you if we have further questions,
Chen's robot voice tells me. I nod and wave the door open for them. Hopefully they won't have any more questions. At least not today. I finish my programming, then flip on one of my favorite old vids. Bot monitoring is a lot of sitting around. You only have to work if something goes wrong. Like they find a body. Ew. I shudder and turn up the sound, singing along with the corny theme song, letting my mind drift off to 20th century Earth. 3. A sudden drop in the noise level of the bar draws my eyes to the door. The reason keeps my attention. Thick dark hair with just the perfect amount of curl, ruggedly handsome features, broad shoulders and sharply tailored clothing that hints at a well-toned but not muscle-bound body. Wow! I lean over to yell into Kara's ear as the sound ratchets back up to normal. Check out the dude at 7 o'clock! Ain't he shiny? Shiny? Kara drawls. Is that from one of your ancient TV vids? She swivels on her stool, and her lips make a shocking pink O of surprise. You're right. He is shiny. Shiny is perfect, she purrs. He's perfect. She swings back around to check her hair and makeup in the big mirror over the bar, her eyes darting over to keep the newcomer in view at the same time. I glance at my friend as she pulls a long lock of pink and gold hair down over one eye and pushes her boobs further up out of her hot pink camisole. If it were any tighter, she'd pop right out. She winks at me, her violet eyes catching the light, then licks her lips, knocks back her drink, and aggressively turns her back to the man walking toward the bar. Next to her, my reflection with its drab blue eyes, gray coverall, and shaggy brown mop of hair is barely noticeable, even though I tower over her. Somehow, I just fade into the background. I focus on the shiny guy in the mirror and realize he is staring right at me. For a long moment, I look deep into his chocolate brown eyes. Is he still coming this way? Kara hisses at me. I start, breaking eye contact with Mr. Shiny, and look down at Kara. She gazes past me and bats her eyelashes at the guy on my right. He nearly spits out his drink in surprise. I glance back up at the mirror, but the shiny guy is gone. I quickly scan the room and pick him out again. Looks like he wants to talk to the barmaster. Bars that we can afford to frequent don't have bartenders. Instead, they have barbots to serve the drinks, and a barmaster who sits up on a catwalk, monitoring the room and the credit flow. If anyone gets out of line, he calls security without getting physically involved. It's a pretty floaty job if you don't mind working the night shift. Of course, we're in space, so night shift is just a designation anyway. I tried that job for a week. Too much human interaction. And drunks get cranky. Maintenance bots just run into gum once in a while. He looks like station security to me, I tell Kara. Probably looking for someone who's outstayed his welcome. I wonder why he isn't in uniform. Mr. Shiny climbs right up the access ladder, his pants just tight enough to show off his equally shiny backside. He gestures smoothly at the barmaster's hollow screen, flashes a hollow ID, says a few words. The master's usually grumpy face gets even grumpier, and he waves his arms around in a menacing fashion. Eventually, he huffs and starts tapping away. After a couple seconds, the barmaster points at me. "He's coming over here," I squeak. Kara rolls her eyes, jiggles the girls a little, and rubs a bit of whiskey between them. Completely distracted, I ask, "Did you just use your drink as perfume? Does that work?" "Hey, that was my drink." I grab the glass and put it in front of me on the bar. "Man's always the fullest," she says with a brilliant smile, and turns to watch Mr. Shiny in the mirror. Sometimes I wonder why I like her so much.
"Triana Moore."
His voice is smooth and shiny, too. Flipping his hand open, a hollow ID appears for a second. It looks pretty official, but he snaps it closed before I can read anything.
"I'm Special Agent O'Neill. I need to ask you a few questions about a confidential matter."
I narrow my eyes and look him over, totally faking a cool I don't feel. He's tall. At least he's taller than me, and even better looking up close. "You'll need to transfer a copy of that ID to me. I didn't get a chance to properly read it," I say in my best upper lev voice. Unfortunately, it comes out sounding like someone added helium to the station scrubbers. O'Neill stares at me as he flicks his hand open again and transfers the data without looking. His chocolate eyes look less melty, more like stone, or frozen chocolate. I could really go for some chocolate right now. My hollow ring vibrates just as Kara decides it's time to jump in the game. She flicks a long lock of hair over her bronze shoulder and slowly rotates on her bar stool, giving the agent a multi-angle view of her, assets.
"Maybe I can help you with a confidential matter," she says in her low, sultry voice.
How does she make everything sound like a proposition? I let Kara do her thing and call up his ID. Standard station security ID, verified by the station OS. It lists his department and job title. Special agent for the board. Holy Zark, this guy works directly for the station board of directors. I look up at him and compare his face to the photo. He's so naturally shiny that even his ID pic is good. Figures. It also lists his name. Tiberius O'Neill E. Mendoza bin Tariq E. Reynolds. "Seriously? That's your name?" I blurt out. Names tell you a lot about your social and financial status in this neck of the galaxy. The really top-lev guys have a single last name, like Gates or Huateng. There are only a handful of top-lev names, and everyone knows them. The only way to get one is to be born with it, or contract in. The station board of directors is filled with single names. Then there are the rest of the upper levs. They're like this guy. Depending on how high up his family is, he could have a whole string of lesser names that wouldn't fit on the ID. It's like they're trying to match up quality with quantity. And they're all hoping to find an unattached top lev who's willing to contract them through the glass ceiling. Although those contracts rarely last more than a few years, and the expiration always includes a name reversion clause. Makes you wonder why they even bother trying. The further down you go, the fewer names you have, until you reach the bottom, where we only have one again. Of course, most people only use their primary last name except in very formal situations, like contracting ceremonies or station identification. Is there just a tinge of red in his face?
"Yes, that's my name, Technician Moore," he says, stressing my one name. Jerk. "You need to come with me. I don't make a habit of leaving bars with strange men." "Look," he says, leaning in until we're almost nose to nose. "You can come with me voluntarily, or I can bring you in as a person of interest." He stares into my eyes, menacing, then turns away. "Are you coming?"
"I'll come with you," Kara says, her voice like velvet. Seriously, how does she do that? O'Neill gives her a quick glance. There's a hint of a smile on his face. Surprisingly, it's not the "I always reel them in" smirk I expect, but an actual glint of humor. He gives her a quick wink.
"Maybe next time," he says.
Then he walks to the door without waiting to see if I follow. I do.